This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Felica on the Power Hour today.
Yeah, the Bears are going to be
Bears here. Back.
Yeah. Appreciate Andy Staples joining us in hour number one. You just heard from Brian Brown, from the case you missed it from the day before. And we're going to talk a little Georgia Tech football later this hour with radio analyst Sean Bedford.
Attorney at law.
That's right. Can't make any jokes there. So we'll see what happens on that front. But again, we continue to stream live on the ESPN app. SiriusXM 371, that's where you can find us on satellite radio. And there's a handful of terrestrial radio stations that have jumped on us as well. And we appreciate that. It's all good.
All right. Let's jump to some audio, video from yesterday. Dabo Swinney, after practice yesterday, had high praise for his defensive unit.
Was just, it's probably the best first scrimmage defensively that I've been a part of here. I mean, just absolutely no mistakes from a beating yourself standpoint, no penalties. Just didn't give up big plays, got stops in the red zone. I mean, no drop off. I mean, I just was very pleased with how crisp they played. And then offensively, first group started out pretty good, moved the ball well, just kind of stalled out, had to settle for some field goals. But then as the day wore on, I thought the energy of the defense, they started getting some pressure. And, you know, we kind of made some mistakes. But, I think we had 10 or 11 penalties on offense. So we had CQ exchange issues, had a couple drops. We got running backs, receivers jumping off sides. And those are things you just can't do. It's hard enough to move the ball. And now when you're having kind of self-inflicted issues, that's not good. So today was much better from that standpoint, much better.
As breaking news as Mark Packer likes to eat Italian food. hey, we know they're going to be filthy good, right? To me, that's not the question at Clemson for 21. It's the offensive line, who's going to be the running back, all that stuff. But no surprise that Clemson's defense is absolutely loaded, and they are deep, and they will be really, really a handful for everybody.
All right. So, David Hale put together a stat the other day.
Saw it.
In the playoff era, Clemson's scoring differential in ACC play is plus 1,446 points.
36. 1,436.
I'm just reading what?
No, I'm just reading David Hilson. But whatever. The point of it is, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
That's a big number.
The next best one is Virginia Tech at 185.
Plus 185.
Right.
That stat is so ridiculous that you had to read it two or three times to make sure you were reading it correctly. And listen, Clemson's been great. Listen, they've gone to, what, six straight college football playoffs. Everybody's chasing them. I do think the field has caught up a little bit versus what we've seen in years past, because I think North Carolina's really talented. I think Miami's got a potential to make some noise. I think there's some other teams that are going to be really, really good. But it all goes through Clemson, South Carolina.
Okay.
And it's going to start with that defensive unit, which will swallow you whole.
All right. So let me play back on this scoring margin thing for just a second. You see the David Hale tweet from the other day. Now, how does this 14, 36...
46, whatever.
...compare with other schools around the country in the same time frame? Most notably, the University of Alabama, 1462. Okay? Ohio State, 1430. Oklahoma, 1,000. Washington, 645. Here are the number twos, okay, behind each of those leagues. Now, that's a power five. So now let's go to the number twos. And you got Georgia is 641. That's a big number. That's a 800-point drop from Alabama. Wisconsin's 578. That's a pretty significant drop. That's almost 900 points from Ohio State. USC is 440, which is 200 points from Washington. TCU is 362. That's nearly 700 points from Oklahoma. And Virginia Tech is 185. Those are the number twos. You like the fast math there? Appreciate you. All right. So, if Clemson is going to be better defensively, which is what we're saying, and then you heard Dabo say, the offense is kind of still finding its way a little bit. I'm not surprised at all by that.
Well, the offensive line last year, it was young. They were not physical enough for the games that really mattered. And that's where they've got to get better. And I know in the spring that was a priority. I know so far in the fall camp, they're still trying to figure out the combinations up front. You lose Travis Etienne. Hey, you know, that's a big loss. And I know it's going to be running back by committee. They've got guys, and Dabo talked about, man, I really like my running backs, but somebody's got to step up. And guess what? You got to step up in that first game against a Georgia team that's going to be also, much like you, loaded defensively up front. So that offensive line is going to get tested. The running back situation needs to be figured out. But Clemson's defense is going to be really salty.
All right.
They're going to be good.
So here are the three main contenders, according to some of the stats and info folks at ESPN, for best defense ever at Clemson. Okay? 2018, they recorded the second most sacks in ACC history, and they led FBS in scoring defense.
Well, that defense in front, just go check out the National Football League draft, right? First round. I mean, that just special unit right there now. That was 15-0, first time since the 1800s. Took on the greatest football team ever known to man, which I was told by Alabama from some folks on our sister network, and they just got the living you-know-what kicked out of them in San Jose. So that defense was really, really special.
All right. The 2014 team led the FBS in total defense and recorded 45 sacks, which was tied for seventh most in the FBS. There's Vic Beasley Jr. and other contenders. Adairsville in the house again. Look at that.
Hey, they've had terrific teams now. All right, are we going down the path that this year's Clemson's defense? Is that what we're talking
about? Jarrett, by the way, Pro Bowler.
Are we going down the path here that
we think
that this year's defense?
Sit tight.
I'm just asking.
I'm getting ready to give you the third team.
All right, go for it.
On the list.
All right.
1990.
They were great.
Led the nation at 219 yards a game.
Now, this looks like the 81
team. That's the 81 team.
Yeah.
That looks like 90.
Yep.
That's 90.
That is definitely 90.
Okay. Tigers allowed two opponents to rush for more than 100 yards in a game. 71 rushing yards allowed a game, ACC record.
You know who coached that 90 team, don't you?
Duh.
Youngster people, very, very tough youngster, fine Christian boys, mama, daddy. We'll hit you the next week, boys. I'm telling you, that 90 team would hit you.
All right.
That was a good team.
But here, not on this list.
Is 81. Please. My freshman year, 1981, was there in Miami. That crew now, if that crew, you can, Clemson's had a lot of great teams, all right? A lot of great defensive teams. But that 81 team's going to be on somebody's short list. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
I don't know what the sports and info folks are getting to.
Did they only go back 30 years? Is
18,
that what it was?
14, 90. I just tell you what's on the list.
Yeah, well, the list needs to have the 1981 team on it.
I don't see it.
Well, I'm just telling you, from experience.
Terry Kennard.
Dude,
Jeff Davis.
Fridge. I mean, Dan Benish. I mean, there were so many guys. God, that defensive line was great. Everybody's got their opinion. But if that 81 team's not on your short list, you have made a mistake, or you didn't see it, or you didn't do your homework. Just saying.
Can I just say that? I don't think anybody from ESPN Stats and Info needs to visit with Jeff Davis at this point.
Or, that 81 team now. And here's the funny thing. You know what? Early in
40
that,
years ago.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's good math.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the season.
Yeah.
Week two.
Yeah, it was.
Guess who they played?
Georgia.
And Herschel Walker. You know how much? If you told Herschel Walker there's $1 million.
Keith. Clemson has an outstanding defensive unit.
Hey, Herschel, there's $1 million in the end zone. See if you can get it. He didn't.
No.
I was at that one. Billy and Barb came down to visit me as a freshman for that game.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Parents weekend, was it?
It was. We were sitting in the upper deck, man. That was some kind of day, boy.
Can I? Our producer says it was week three, not week two.
Week three, whatever. I said it was early. They played Tulane. They played Wofford in the very first game. And we're trailing at the end of the first quarter. That team went on to win the national championship. Then he went down to Tulane. Dale Hatcher tried to hit the gondola in the Superdome, punting.
Tulane is Buddy D used to say on WWL in New Orleans.
Tulane.
Looking at Tulane.
That's it. So Dogs in week three, and again they played, coming off a national championship. You know Georgia in 1980. Y'all remember that year. Coming off the national championship season. And rolled into Death Valley. You know, it was like 13-3, I believe, was the score, something like that.
Do you remember how many points they scored on Wake Forest that year?
Yes, 82. And I've told that story. It was on Halloween. Billy and Barb were at that game. I've told this story. I'm sitting in the student section, and it's like 49 to whatever at halftime. And so I leave to go to the other sideline to the small Wake Forest crowd that was there. And I find Billy and Barb. I sit down with them at halftime. The guy sitting in front of Billy turns around and is livid.
At you?
No. Livid at what he just saw. Because it's like whatever the score was at that, 49-7 or whatever the score was.
Was that Chuck Mills coaching the
Knicks? I don't remember. Here's what I do remember. The guy turns around to Billy. Here's the opening kickoff. Clemson gets the ball first and says, I'll tell you one thing, Billy. If they score again, I'm out of here. By the time he said it, the first play of the second half, they go deep to Perry Tuttle, and he catches it the 40, the 30, the 20, the 10, the 5, touchdown. Cannon goes off. Tigers doing more push-ups, probably having a heart attack early third quarter, and they scored 82. And the other thing I remember about that game.
What's that?
Is the next day I'm watching the Danny Ford television show.
Oh, great.
Right?
Yeah, how was that?
Let me tell you. Let me tell you what was so funny about it. The dude that scores the last touchdown.
Yeah.
Goes on a fullback dive, 60, 70 yards or whatever it was, and Danny is trying to do play-by-play. And, of course, you know, Danny gives you the, here's number 25 or whatever the guy's number was. Fine youngster, Christian boy, mama, daddy. Danny has no idea who the guy was. Has no idea who the guy is that goes 70 yards for the 82nd point. But that's a true story. 82-24, I'll never forget it. Halloween day, and the Tiger, before the game started, comes out between the crowd, top of the hill, before the boys run down.
Right.
He's wearing a pumpkin. Tiger was wearing a giant pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
82-24.
Craig Crawford.
Very, very fine young man. Danny had, and I remember, I said, Coach, you had no idea who scored up.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Georgia Tech prides itself on its traditions. From playing in historic Bobby Dodd Stadium, the oldest on-campus stadium on the FBS level, to its iconic Ramblin' Wreck, leading the team onto the field before every home game since 1961. But these Yellow Jackets blend their old-school customs with new-school swag. Playing for the 404, representing the ATL, bolstering its social media presence, all in a quest to elevate the Georgia Tech brand through Atlanta and across America. The man behind it all, known as the Minister of Mayhem, the Creator of Chaos, and perhaps more importantly, the greatest Waffle House ambassador of our time, Coach Jeff Collins has smothered and covered Georgia Tech football with his vision for its future. Not only with his branding boldness, but with his relentless passion and energy. Even if it means an ice bath after practice.
Hey, Coach, you know the ice baths are for the players, right?
Schedule's no joke.
No.
Schedule's
neither
no joke.
The ice baths, apparently, for GC5.
Right.
Okay, here's the schedule. Now, somehow or another, it's only the second hardest schedule in the country?
Yeah, I just asked let's get to this first, and then we'll work back to the point I'd like to make.
Okay, second hardest schedule in the country. Here is the rundown of who they're playing in the top 15. These are all road games, by the way. No, they're home games. Clemson.
No.
Three road, two home. Okay. Three road in white, two home games. Clemson, Carolina, Miami, Notre Dame, Georgia. From November 6th on, hello.
I mean, come on. You got three in the preseason top 14.
Right.
Now, I just asked the staff, and again, this is apparently an FPI deal, right?
Right.
And let me just preface that. This is an FPI deal.
Football Power Index.
You know how much I like it.
Well, you're big fans of BPI, and FPI is right next door.
You got it. So I just asked the staff. I'm just out of curiosity's sake. You got three in the preseason top 14 on that list, and you never know how these schedules play out. A lot of times in the middle of August, you look at the schedule and go, oh, my God, that's murderer's row. How are we going to win a game? Then you find out those teams aren't as good as you expect. I mean, you never know. All right. So I'll just give you that up front.
Okay.
So I was told that Arkansas, the Hogs, had the number one toughest schedule.
Sam Pittman coaching up Arkansas.
Right. He's done a nice job in a short period of time. Really, I've been impressed.
Yeah.
So I looked up their schedule just out of curiosity. So I said, man, if it's harder than Georgia Tech, I'd like to see it. They've got Rice, Georgia Southern, and Arkansas Pine Bluff on their schedule.
Lions of Arc Pine Bluff coming in.
So how many times they play Alabama? Six. Does Arkansas play in Alabama six times?
Who else they got there?
Well, I mean, you got Texas. It's a great non-conference game, right? Soon to be a conference game.
Texas is back, right? Are they back?
Texas is always back. Okay. Come on. Yeah. A&M, legit, top 10.
Legit, yeah.
Georgia, legit, could be the best team in the country.
I think that's their permanent crossover.
That's fine. Yeah. At Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State, LSU, Bama, Missouri.
Okay, Missouri. I like Eli Drinkwitz. I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't want to get into a crazy conversation about let's debate who's got the hardest
schedule.
My conference
can beat up your conference.
All that stuff's garbage, especially when you haven't seen anybody play yet.
Somebody wrote that book, by the way.
You haven't seen anybody play a game yet.
Right.
Georgia Tech's schedule is going to be tough because you got to figure all five of those teams that we just threw on the board, even if they are not as good as advertised, for argument's sake, still going to be really talented. Right? Really good. Should be.
Well, let's go back and look at this thing again here. I mean, you got Clemson, you have Georgia, you have Notre Dame, you have North Carolina, you have Miami. You got five of the top 15 in the AP preseason poll. Plus,
where's Arkansas Pine Bluff? Not going to squeeze those guys in
now.
There.
And here's, let me tell you that. Okay, you're playing Northern Illinois, who you're probably going to beat. I mean, they're struggling to kind of find the bounce back, right? From when 3, 4, 5 years ago, they were still really good off Dave Doran's tenure there, but you're playing Kennesaw State, who, by the way, is an FCS playoff participant every year. So you're not playing just some run-of-the-mill FCS program, right? And they'll be gunned up to get there. And then, by the way, throw in Boston College, who we think might be pretty good. Throw in Pittsburgh, who we think might be pretty good. Virginia and Virginia Tech. That's the rest of your schedule, and nobody in Duke. Seriously. But it's not as good as Arkansas.
Whatever. I mean, it's no big deal. The guy that's got the hardest schedule is the guy that stinks. That's 0-12. That's the dude that's got the hardest schedule. If you really want to get down to it. I mean, the guy that can't beat anybody, it doesn't matter who's on the schedule, it's an uphill climb. But this will be a really difficult test for Georgia Tech. All right. And I do think Coach Collins will have his best team. I do.
May not be reflected in wins.
And so Georgia Tech fans need to, again, just get in reality a second. I think they have been. I mean, you knew this was going to be a slow climb, turn around the program, but it is going to be a difficult task given what is at stake with this 21 schedule.
All right, let's go play the FPI on strength of schedule here for all the ACC, just to give you an idea here. Okay, they're three in the top 20, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Miami, NC State, Wake, Virginia, Pitt, Boston College, Carolina, Syracuse, Louisville, Virginia Tech are all top 50. How about that? Clemson 51, Duke 62 out of the 130.
And you know what? 3 weeks from now, we'll have a better handle on who we think is going to be pretty good, who's got work to do. I mean, we have no idea. I keep emphasizing that, whether it's a preseason poll, a list like this. You know, it is all speculation at this point. We don't have any answers. Mm-hmm. We don't.
We know theirs is hard, though.
See, on the surface, it looks like it's a difficult uphill climb. No question.
Yeah. Sean Bedford was a star in the winner of the first Bullsworth Trophy, by the way, as America's Best Walk-On back in 2009. He is going to join us here in a few minutes. We'll get his insight of what he thinks from his radio analyst spot with Andy Demetra in Atlanta. So we're looking forward to talking to him. And the road trip is at Georgia Tech tonight. So we'll do all that.
Heading to Switzerland tomorrow. See the Deacs.
Wake Forest tomorrow. I think this league has upgraded across the board in scheduling. Okay? It's helped itself in scheduling. But we are still in a cyclical deal here, depending on what kind of team and what year, right? I mean, it's always that tricky game of how good are you going to be and how tough is your schedule and how does that work? And sometimes it plays perfectly. Sometimes, in the case of Georgia Tech, you're still building and you're playing a difficult schedule.
The ACC, in my opinion, has always done a pretty good job with scheduling mm-hmm. for football, always. The bigger issue for me with the Atlantic Coast Conference is, can you win the games of note? I've said it. How many times have I said it on the show?
Right.
The narrative changes when you beat people of note.
Especially on the road.
Anywhere. I mean, I think when you're a conference like right now where the ACC stands, we know what Clemson's all about. We think North Carolina and Miami are going to be really good. The upside for BC, Pitt, NC State looks terrific. Mm-hmm. Virginia Tech, what are you going to do? Virginia's sitting there kind of waiting, laying in the weeds. We'll see how it all plays out. But the only way you get national respect is to beat teams of note. I mean, it's the only way. I mean, there used to be a thing called Clemsoning. Mm-hmm. You know what Clemsoning means now? And that's a cool number beside your name. You're going to get worn out tonight. That's what the Clemsoning means now. The only way that changed is to start beating people of note, where right. people go, wow, did you see what Clemson did last night? Or whatever the case may be. So for North Carolina, Miami, everybody else, hey, the only way you get back in that conversation, somebody got a number beside their name, beat them.
And that's why we've talked about like road games early in the season, Pitt going to Tennessee, NC State to Mississippi State, even Rutgers coming to Syracuse.
Got to win games like that.
Yeah.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Sean Bedford, member of the 2009 ACC championship team at Georgia Tech, is back with us again today. Now the radio analyst with Andy Demetra in Atlanta. And Sean, I guess the best way to start this is you played on a championship team. I'm not sure you guys tackled the schedule, though, that Jeff Collins is going to hit this fall.
It has to be up there. I mean, this is a brutal schedule. When you look at having five of the top 15 preseason teams on that schedule, and then you couple that with the fact that even some of the teams that maybe aren't getting the recognition as top 15 teams are not easy outs by any stretch. You look at a team like Boston College and what they did under Jeff Hafley last year, and the progression they're expected to take. I think a lot of people have them as sort of a sneaky, wild card in that Atlantic division. So having them on the out of division schedule certainly doesn't do Tech any favors. And then even when you get to the FCS game on there, Kennesaw State is not a team to mess around with, given what they can do with their option offense and what they've done at that FCS level. Certainly a game that Tech should win, but not a game that they can sleep on.
Sean, we know the schedule's tough, but don't you get a sense that Georgia Tech, again, another year with Jeff Collins, should be a better football team than they were a year ago?
Oh, this should be a radically better team than they were even last year. When you look at what Tech perhaps could benefit from the sort of freebie year that they got last year. Now, obviously, we have to note that what happened last year with COVID was a horrible situation for everyone. But the fact that Tech was able to take a lot of young guys who hadn't had a lot of experience and get them those game reps, and sometimes in some high-pressure situations, that's going to help this maturity curve, because this is a team that needed to get old in a hurry, and they're working towards that right now. But I think between what Tech did in terms of gaining that experience and really improving themselves through the transfer portal, really bulking up the offensive and defensive lines in the offseason, and hopefully fixing their problems on special team with the kicking game, this is a team that, you know, I think everybody should – the record is not going to indicate how good this team is. I think this is a team that really is poised to take a leap forward. They just have to do it against a very difficult schedule.
Okay, so the number one commodity that has to get better, we've all talked about this in the offseason, is the offensive line. Jeff Collins has taken us, you know, lock, stock, and barrel to the improvement of the offensive line. You've watched practice. You've seen some of the scrimmages. How much better is that offensive line today?
I think they're significantly better, to put it very lightly. I think this is a unit that has made a huge jump forward. And when you go back to where this the offensive line in particular was 2 years ago, making that transition from Paul Johnson to the Dave Pettenote offense under Jeff Collins. They were having to relearn everything they did. Technique was totally different. Even the way you got in their stance was different. And so seeing them going from, you know, having to figure out what they were doing to that being second nature, and then it injecting some new talent into this team. You know, Devin Cochran, the transfer from Vanderbilt, comes over, would have been a preseason all-SEC guy, transferred in, sat out all of last season. He's an instant upgrade at that position. You know, there's two other transfers who will likely play significant roles on this team this year, if not start. And so this is a bigger, stronger offensive line that I think is going to do a great job of opening holes for a stable of running backs that any team in the country would be jealous to have.
John, I'm going to the other side of the ball. When you have a schedule like this, a team last year that gave up a bunch of points, I think defensively, Georgia Tech's got to figure out a way to get off the field. I don't care who they're playing. We know the opposition, the schedule is tough, but they've got to improve on that side of the ball if they're going to show some signs of, hey, we're heading the right direction.
Oh, and there's no question about that. This is a team that coming into last year would have hung its hat on having a defensive identity, and it just never materialized. But I think a lot of that really doesn't reflect how talented they are in the secondary. Tech just couldn't quite put things together in the secondary for much of the season. But now, I don't think that was due to any lack of talent in the back four or back five, in the case this is a base nickel team. Really, I look at what was going on up front, and that's where I think a lot of their problems came from, was lack of a consistent pass rush, lack of guys who could sit there, eat up blocks, and really clamp down some of those rushing lanes. I think this is an area where Tech is going to go from really having some problems last year to this being an actual strength of this defense. You know, in that NC State game at the end of the year, Tech was starting a freshman safety at one of the defensive ends because they just didn't have guys. Too many people were injured. Too many people were sick. There was just too many people held out. And now all those young guys who managed to get reps because of those circumstances, they have that experience now. And I think a guy like Jordan Dominick, who was basically Tech's entire pass rush last season, he's working in there in what could be a six-man rotation with a couple of transfers, and Kevin Harris from Alabama, Keon White from Old Dominion, Antonius Clayton, the former five-star who transferred in from Florida a couple years ago. That defensive end room got a lot better in the offseason, and I think that's going to make the whole defense better. Couple that with the fact that TK Chimedza, who was the team's best defensive tackle coming into the season last year, missed all of last season with a knee injury. So getting him back, pairing him with Jamin Brooks, the defensive tackle, I think, is still a little bit of a work in progress. But bolstering that defensive line, I think, is going to make this defense immensely better than they were last season.
Okay, we can be better defensively. Ace Ealy's going to have an impact. We've all talked about that. We know there's going to be this dynamic over there of experience and personnel. Bottom line, though, you block for Jonathan Dwyer, who was the ACC Player of the Year. Is Jahmyr Gibbs the best running back to step on campus since Jonathan Dwyer?
Jahmyr Gibbs is the truth. He is that dude. I mean, he is as good a running back as I have seen since Jonathan Dwyer. And I think he has the potential to potentially even go beyond what Jonathan was. I mean, he's got that elusiveness, that sort of next level. And what I think he adds that is really special about his game is what he can do as a receiver coming out of the backfield, you know, even flexing out into the slot. He is so dangerous and multifaceted a weapon. I don't know that Tech has seen anyone quite like him in a long, long time. He gets the comparisons to guys like Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara. He reminded me right away of C.J. Spiller in his first year. That was the first comparison that came to mind for me, but he is that good. At the same time, though, one of my biggest pet peeves about this offseason is everyone is sleeping on Jordan Mason. He was one of the top running backs in the country 2 years ago, or top running backs in the ACC 2 years ago. And he has been just sort of glossed over in all the Jahmyr Gibbs hype. Jahmyr Gibbs is a special talent, but don't sleep on the rest of this running back room because most teams in the country would love to have any one of the top four guys that Georgia Tech has right now.
Pac, that's a lawyer saying that. That's telling you it's a pet peeve.
I'm not going to cross-examine the smart guy. That's going to tell you that right now. That's why I like hanging with you, Wes.
Exactly.
As far as Georgia Tech fans go, the lunatic fringe, which everybody's got them, says, hey, we can win every game. Let's be realistic. Is a bowl game in the making at Georgia Tech? Would that be considered a really, really good year, especially given five teams in the top 15 on the schedule?
I think that's a realistic goal, and I think that's where Tech's sights should be set right now, is trying to get to that six-win mark, getting to a bowl, taking that next step in this progression. Everyone knew when Jeff Collins came in, because of the scheme transitions, because of the need to infuse talent into this roster, that there was going to be a gradual evolution of what this team becomes. It's time to take that next step, though. 2019 was sort of the year zero. Last year was... I mean, we all know what 2020 was. And so I think there's a bit of a pass given for those 2 years, but the foundation has been built, and now it's time to take that next step. And I do think a bowl game would be that critical milestone to hit as Jeff Collins' team kind of comes into its own here. So I'm excited to see what this team can do. As you said, it's a really difficult schedule. But I think this is a team that can contend for a bowl. And, if a couple things get weird in the Coastal, who knows?
Business as usual.
Come on, that's a given.
Here's the thing, though. And, Sean, Mark and I get ourselves in this conversation occasionally, and we'll close with this. Georgia and former players are interesting. And obviously, I stand with one every week. And, Roddy, you are one. We know a bunch of guys like that. I think the former players understood the long game better than most when Jeff Collins took the job. Anybody that played under Paul Johnson respected the grind, but at the same time, they knew the gear shift was going to be pretty significant here.
Oh, absolutely. I think everyone understood that, or the former players at least, understood that there was going to be the scheme shift is not something you just change overnight. These were guys who had to reshape not only the way they, not only the plays that they had memorized, but they had to reshape their bodies. They had to prepare themselves for a different kind of attack and a different kind of mindset. And it's almost like if you were to take a tennis player and say, okay, you're competing at a high level, but now I want you to do it left-handed. And so there's certainly things that are going to carry over, but it's going to take some time to really adjust to that. Now, I think there's also something to be said for the fact that this was a team that was not, this was a team that was in a bowl game before Jeff Collins came over. So it's not like the cupboard was entirely bare, but this was a team that really needed to be remolded and reshaped. And I think they're in the process of doing that. I think most former players understand that. They understand how hard this is. And one other thing I think players understand better than a lot of fans is players recognize that it's really hard to win games at the Power Five level. And a lot of people forget that. They assume that every game should be a given. But as a certain former coach used to tell me, the other team's trying to win too, and they've got some pretty good players as well. So, it's not an easy thing to do to win games. If it was, we'd have a lot. Coaches wouldn't get paid what they do. Right. And I'm impressed with what I'm seeing, and I think this is going to be a big year for Georgia Tech.
We all hope so. We hope it's a big year for everybody on this channel. Believe me. This network's got all the pom-poms out. Yeah. We want everybody to go 12-0, but it didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah. Hey, Sean, thanks a bunch. Good to see you.
Good to see y'all, too. And, hey, we're almost here for football season. Let's do it. Great time to be alive.
You keep coming back to it, don't you?
I didn't see any Arkansas Pine Bluffs and Rices and all that in there, but it's tough.
Yeah, no doubt.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer in Durham, thank you notes galore from everywhere around the league. You know how much I love the thank you note. Wes, yesterday we started talking about the Alliance. In fact, actually all week we were talking about the Alliance. And we started talking about ACC Pac-12, how few and far between for the most part you see those relationships and games. But they do go back in time, the two leagues.
It's like the late 60s from like 64 to about 70, 71, there was this era where the ACC would go to the West Coast, right? And they play these games. Now, here's the thing about football. Today, you get on a plane Friday morning, you fly, you do your meetings, you play, you get on a plane, you come back. Not back then. And yesterday when we got into talking about this, our buddy Tim Bure sent a picture to us.
Or four.
Some we didn't ask for, and some we got because we were talking about this.
Right.
The other thing, too, is Georgia Tech, with Bud Carson as the coach who replaced Bobby Dodd, they went and played Southern California in the late 60s. And then all of a sudden, not only were they going to movie studios out in California, then all of a sudden things would start happening in Atlanta when, like, they turned to the 70s. Like, for instance, here, Ann Margaret is in town in, like, the late 60s.
Hello.
Filming CeCe and Company with the noted, renowned actor Joe Namath in the lead role. And Ann Margaret stops by to visit with Bud Carson. Now, I don't have confirmation on who 92 and 43 are in the back, but they're excited that Ann Margaret's in practice.
They're glad to be there. 92, whoever you are, you're holding your gut in for 3 minutes, hoping that Ann's going to give you a glance. And 43 back there, he's like, oh, yeah, what is going on here now?
Coach.
Hey, coach, put me in.
Hey, Bud Carson, by the way, noted for his incredibly physical and taxing practices, does not look very thrilled that Ann Margaret has stopped by for a photo op, does he?
Well, he needs to get a life. That's Ann Margaret, like the ultimate sideline reporter, apparently, in
tell
the 60s.
What. Now, don't forget, if you didn't see the movie CeCe and Company starring Joe Namath and Ann Margaret, don't feel bad. Not many others did either.
What a great picture.
CeCe and Company or that picture?
No, I'm not talking about the picture, like the movie. That wasn't great, except for Ann.
Yeah.
No disrespect, Joe. I mean, I know you were the ladies' man, but man, Ann Margaret.
If you need to see some of Ann Margaret's better work, I suggest Viva Las Vegas with Elvis Presley.
Elvis.
Hey. As Lucky Jackson. Anyway.
If you had an Elvis reference on show 441, congratulations. You got free parking.
All right.
That's a winner.
All right. Now, as noted earlier in the conversation, Tim Bure, friend of the show, texted Pack and said, oh, I've got some file photos from when Clemson visited Southern California to play USC in the late 60s.
66.
This is the kind of material we're here for. Look at the Blazers with the tiger on the breast pocket.
I kind of like that, by the way. That's Ryan O'Neal.
Yeah, young Ryan O'Neal on the movie sets,
and
huh?
There's Walter Cox, who was the dean of students, went on to become the president.
Who's that in the hat?
And the dude in the hat got his back turned to you.
Hey, boys, y'all got my best side. We out here looking for Mickey Mouse.
At Disneyland.
Frank Howard. He's great.
We got Walter Cox. That's what you did when you went and played on the West Coast. Georgia Tech had gone out a couple of years prior, or right around that same time. They went to the movie sets. And that's on the
Lost in Space was
set
the show.
Of Lost in Space,
right,
huh?
Right.
How about that?
So great. I love these old pictures. Like, I mean, in a totally different era, different universe and everything else. But Coach Howard had his boys looking good in them Tiger Blazers.
Can we get one of those for you?
I don't think they make those anymore. I don't.
Hey, Dan Radakovich. Now, come on now.
We got a Blazer right over here, but that's not what
I'm looking for.
That's Clemson National
this
Championship
is,
Golf
this
Team.
This is not what I'm looking for.
No, the hot orange Blazer? I'm
not looking for the George Bennett Ipte Blazer. I like the George Bennett Ipte Blazer as much as the next guy.
That's 10-year anniversary. Clemson Golf National Championship team.
Can we get one of those navy blue Clemson with the roaring tiger on the breast pocket for you?
That's kind of a good look.
Tell you what, if I could get you in one of those at a tailgate this fall.
I'd wear one of those.
I know you would.
I'd go for that.
I'd like to have one.
If I can get that Frank Howard fedora he had on too, I'd go for one of those.
What happened to those days? I showed you a picture of my dad hosting the Bill Tate football show.
Right.
And Bill Tate had the monogrammed blazer with Wake Forest football on it.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to those? Every young man in our program gets a blazer.
I appreciate Tim Bray doing that because he watched us yesterday talking about the Pac-12 ACC relationships. He said, you know what? I think I got some pictures back. I said, man, send them. We'll have a good time with those things.
Yeah. And that's the way it used to be.
Yeah.
Commercial flight.
No doubt.
No charter.
If you're going to make the trip, let's stay a while and see what's going on out there and give this a real road trip.
And as they say, out there to eat on the budget.
Oh, yeah. If I got a box lunch, I can assure you. But, you know, the anticipation of what happens with this alliance within the ACC is, I think, it's kind of exciting. I think the feedback, at least on the radio show, has been tremendous. We had a ton of phone calls the other day. People were kind of excited about, man, can you imagine if USC or Penn State or Ohio State or Michigan came to our house to play? It would be awesome. So, again, who knows if this thing's going to work or not. Combinations are endless as far as the schedule standpoint goes. But that's kind of what we've been talking about in terms of, hey, are there games of note that you would sit there at home and go, man, I can't wait to watch it, or have the ability to get a ticket to go see it in person?
Here's the other part about this. I started thinking more and more, especially as it relates to this year, because we've talked about games like the one here in Charlotte with Clemson and Georgia, Alabama, Miami and Atlanta, Ole Miss, Louisville in Atlanta. The neutral site game will be in peril, because if the alliance goes through, the jest to play the home games, right, to get the ticket. That's what one of the things Andy Staples was talking about.
Right.
The value of the home game.
You know, in college football in general, you know, home attendance has been an issue, and has been for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there going, hey, what can we do to make the fan experience better? Well, you can give me the Wi-Fi, you can give me the scoreboards, you can give me better concessions, bigger seats, suites, right, whatever. You can come up with all those. But you know what? At the end of the day, give me the best game. You know, yeah. I mean, don't lose sight of really what it's about, that, hey, if my home schedule has a couple top 20 teams and maybe some new teams I've never seen before – in your lifetime, have you ever seen USC play in person,
yeah,
or Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State? I have a chance to have a game like that at my house. Mm. I'm in if, yeah, I'm a fan.
Well, and here's the thing, too. A decade or so ago, Rachel Bachman, who at the time worked for the Wall Street Journal, and I guess she still does, I don't know, but she wrote an article talking about college football and the 12-step commute. You do it every Saturday.
Yep.
12 steps to the refrigerator, 12 steps to the bathroom. You sit and watch all the college football you want.
Yep.
Then not long after that, a year or two later, there was another story out about the students weren't going to Spartan Stadium in East Lansing because they didn't have Wi-Fi, right?
Yep.
And that became a thing. Well, now it's come around to, in the cycle, hey, look, if the game's good, I'll go, but if it's not, I'll probably stay home and watch a bunch of them. In some ways, got to have you back at the stadium.
Or, hey, I'm going to go tailgate, and I'll go check out the first half. It's out of control. I'm going back to tailgate with my buddies. I mean, so this is that line gets moved every single week, mm-hmm, much less every single year. But if you've got fans and they love your club, if you have a schedule where you're non-conference, hey, we've seen all our conference games before. We got that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give me some non-conference games of note, and I have a chance to see them in my house,
yep,
or an easy road trip, to go 2 hours away, whatever it may be, hey, fantastic. Yep. And to me, that's the upside, exciting part about the alliance, if they can get this thing off the ground, is the potential combinations from a schedule standpoint, home or away,
yeah,
between two different leagues with the Big Ten and the Pac-12. I think is kind of exciting if you're a fan.
All right. Beret sent us one other picture.
We got one more?
We got one more.
All right.
And I'm going to let you kind of – oh. Flora Littlejohn Coliseum. Pilot life.
Thacker and Packer.
There it is. Thacker and Packer. Look at Jim's coat. First of all, the late Jim Thacker. Look at the suede elbow patches. And has Billy still got that one? And the striped tie that goes with it?
He wears it around Christmas time or Thanksgiving. Again, we're here to entertain and inform.
And Margaret. Coach Howard at Disneyland.
You boys going over there and play with Goofy?
Hey, I went over there to Disneyland. I understand Ann Margaret's back there in Atlanta.
Bud Carson got a recruiting advantage.
I could have gotten in my car, drove 2 hours and see Ann Margaret. Yet I got to fly across country wearing this Goofy blazer looking for Mickey Mouse.
And Billy. With the striped tie and the plaid coat.
Still got it.
Ahead of his time.
Still got it.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.